Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Europe and the Arab states seek a Gaza settlement, but Netanyahu wants total victory. After the Alaska summit, where things stand, and U.S.-China trade talks are extended. First, Europe and the Arab states seek a Gaza settlement, but Netanyahu wants total victory. European leaders are just as disenchanted with Donald Trump's policy on Israel as they are with his Ukraine policy. So they're trying to do something about it, spurred on by Israel's starvation of the Palestinian population. The Europeans, mainly Starmer of Britain, Macron of France, and Merz of Germany, circulated an 8-point peace plan, which was followed by a declaration signed by 22 Arab nations that reflected French and Saudi diplomatic efforts over several months. The declaration says, quote, Hamas must end its rule in Gaza and hand over its weapons to the Palestinian Authority with international engagement and support, unquote. This is the first time Arab nations have called for Hamas to be disarmed and give up power in Gaza. The European plan, according to a New York Times report, calls for, quote, a technocratic Palestinian government for Gaza linked to a reformed Palestinian Authority, an international security force, a full withdrawal from by Israel, U.S.-led monitoring of the ceasefire, and ultimately two independent states, unquote. Separately, Germany declared an arms embargo on Israel, and France and the United Kingdom have announced plans to recognize a Palestinian state. Despite all these efforts, the parties agree that the Trump administration must sign on to a peace plan. There's no sign that Trump will do anything contrary to Netanyahu's wishes, however. The Israeli government is putting Gaza under siege and plans to annex both it and the West Bank. To emphasize the point, Netanyahu said on Israeli television that he subscribes to the vision of a greater Israel, a vision that goes beyond the occupied lands to encompass portions of neighboring countries. Arab countries uniformly condemned Netanyahu's remark. Huge crowds in Tel Aviv demanding an end to the war are unlikely to affect his planning either. What will become of the Palestinian population if Gaza is formally occupied? Two possibilities have emerged. One, as reported by The Guardian, calls for moving the population of Gaza City, about 1 million people, somewhere to the south. Quote, the Israeli military will begin preparing for the forcible displacement of Palestinians from Gaza City. Gaza residents will be provided with tents and other shelter equipment to ensure their safety, the Israeli military claimed. It did not say when the mass displacement would begin. The second option is even more outrageous, removal of the population to Africa. Following a visit to Israel by South Sudan's foreign minister, Reuters reports, discussions are ongoing about moving Palestinians to that country, which is in the midst of a humanitarian crisis. Israel, South Sudan, and the U.S. all denied or disclaimed knowledge of this idea, while Palestinian authorities condemned any deportation of the population. After the Alaska summit, where things stand. First of all, the Trump administration is saying nothing about sanctions on Russia for its refusal to accept a ceasefire in Ukraine. Remember that Trump had said, I won't be happy if I walk away without some form of a ceasefire. That was before the summit. Now he accepts Putin's plan for moving directly into peace talks. President Zelensky is firm about the need for a ceasefire, as are European leaders. Otherwise, Russia will keep bombing and taking over territory, which is exactly what it is doing right now. Trump is still thinking about forcing Ukraine to trade peace for land, which would mean ceding about 20% of Ukrainian territory in the east in return for security guarantees. Russia would freeze the line of control of its forces, but this is not a swap, as Trump would put it, because Russia would not be giving up any of its own territory. As for security guarantees for Ukraine, Steve Witkoff, Trump's special envoy, said that Putin had agreed to a game-changing concession that would allow the U.S. to provide security guarantees modeled after NATO's Article 5, the crucial collective defense part of the NATO treaty. But Trump has ruled out a U.S. peacekeeping force in Ukraine, whereas British Prime Minister Keir Starmer has said that Ukraine is on an irreversible path to membership in NATO. In any case, there is no evidence that Putin has conceded on some kind of a NATO role in protecting Ukraine. To the contrary, Russia's foreign minister said just the other day that Russia itself will insist on being a security guarantor in Ukraine. The Europeans immediately responded that that idea was absurd. As for Ukraine, its idea of security guarantees must include having at least some NATO forces stationed in Ukraine. Ukrainians recall that in 1994, in the so-called Bucharest Memorandum, they received robust promises to respect Ukraine's territory, including from Russia, only to have Russia seize parts of Donbas and the Crimea. Finally, peace talks are scheduled to move into a second phase, but whether or not this brings together Putin and Zelensky is very much in doubt. Even if they do meet, these talks are likely to be lengthy and very complicated. Russian and Ukrainian interests are so far apart, for example, on Ukraine's future security, Russian war reparations and boundaries, that a credible agreement is hard to conceive. In all, looking back at this summit, it was a disaster for the U.S., for Trump's presidency, and for Ukraine. A second round of talks looks just as bad, especially as it appears that Russia's position has not changed one iota with respect to Ukraine's independence and Russia's territorial ambitions. Next, U.S.-China trade talks are extended. August 12th was the deadline for a U.S.-China trade agreement. It didn't happen. Trump agreed to a 90-day extension while negotiators continued their work. Absent an agreement, the current 30% tariff on Chinese goods would have been raised sky high, and likewise China's 10% tariff on U.S. goods. Among the issues that divide the two sides are China's desire for more advanced AI chips and the U.S. desire for more Chinese agricultural purchases. Trump wants a quadrupling of China's purchases of U.S. soybeans and fewer Chinese purchases of Russian and Iranian oil. On the Chinese side, however, voices are being raised about the quality of the NVIDIA chips, specifically that they are, quote, not technologically advanced or environmentally friendly. Chinese authorities worry that the chips may have a backdoor, making them a security risk. One other China-related news of note, President Trump says that President Xi Jinping assured him that China would not invade Taiwan during Trump's tenure. "He told me," said Trump on Fox News, "I will never do it as long as you're president. President Xi told me that, and I said, well, I appreciate that. But he also said, but I am very patient and China is very patient." When that conversation supposedly happened is not clear. If it did happen, it would be unprecedented for a Chinese leader to rule out liberating Taiwan without a firm assurance from the United States that it will stop arming or diplomatically supporting Taiwan. Trump's rendering of this conversation may be fake news. In other news, the Israeli military demolishes a food connection between Israelis and Palestinians. The Palestinian National Seed Bank collects and preserves heirloom seeds of crops and plants that are critical to people's food supply. Each year, the Palestinian Bank provides free seeds to hundreds of agricultural workers to promote the preservation of the genetic diversity of some 80 traditional varieties. The seeds have cultural as well as nutritional value. On July 31st, Israeli military forces bulldozed one of the two branches of the seed bank in the West Bank. Its structures, irrigation system, seed collection, putting the seasonal harvest at risk and threatening the seed supply to farmers. A reporter for the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, which published this news, wrote, quote, "It's hard to fault those who claim that the destruction of this agricultural facility is part of a deliberate policy of the State of Israel," unquote. Might this also be considered an act of cultural genocide? The seed bank connects Palestinians in the West Bank to Israel proper. The West Bank farmers who grow the fruits, vegetables, and legumes have, over the past two decades, made their way to top Tel Aviv restaurants, often via direct shipments from wholesale market traders in East Jerusalem, and they're the very same farmers who stand to be harmed by the destruction of the Palestinian National Seed Bank. The Israeli Defense Forces evidently paid no heed to this connection. The U.S. government's tariff income. Fuzzy numbers. Donald Trump claims that, quote, "trillions of dollars are being taken in by the government on tariffs. They have not caused inflation," he says, "or any other problems for America, other than massive amounts of cash pouring into our treasury's coffers," unquote. The figure is nonsense, as I'll underscore in a moment, And of course, Trump ignores the inflationary consequences of the tariffs. It is true that government income from tariffs is substantial, so much so that some Republicans and Trump officials are apparently considering using the revenue as an alternative to the income tax. But the actual likely result of such a major change would be to harm low and middle income people, since they would bear the burden of high tariffs and would not get the promised tax relief to offset high consumer prices, not just on groceries and clothing, but also on health care and other government services. Trump's budget bill will add to the distress of low-income people. That is the assessment of the Congressional Budget Office, which has issued a study that found that the top 10% of earners in the country will receive an average boost of $13,600 per year over the next decade as a direct result of provisions in the budget law, while the bottom 10% of the population will see an average annual decrease in their income of $1,200. Now, as for those trillions of dollars in income, Forbes magazine reports that the actual figure is about $96 billion since Trump's tariffs took effect in April. This revenue, or customs duties, is paid by the importing companies and mostly passed on to consumers. Trump never mentions the fact. Forbes cites J.P. Morgan Chase's chief U.S. economist, Michael Feroli, who argued months ago that Trump's tariffs will result in, quote, meaningfully larger increases in consumer prices and higher inflation at some point this year. That's exactly what is now happening. The Trump administration's exclusion policy on international students. The Trump administration is doing all it can to keep international students, regardless of country of origin, from coming to the United States. The Office of Management and Budget has targeted at least 22 State Department Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs programs whose fiscal year 2025 awards it intends to cut, and that amounts to about $100 million in funding. The programs to be cut include scholarship and leadership awards for young people in Southeast Asia, Africa, the Middle East, and East Asia. These cuts were presaged by Project 2025's call to abolish the Department of Education, and in particular, Title VI of the Higher Education Act of 1965. Title VI provides grants to institutions of higher education to develop and maintain their capacity in area and international studies and world languages. These programs, in the view of Project 2025, did not promote American interests abroad. Experts in international education strongly disagree. For example, Professor Gil Latz, who for 40 years worked with Title VI programs and headed Title VI centers at The Ohio State University, writes that area studies and language programs have in fact fulfilled their four essential purposes: improving U.S. diplomacy, promoting international understanding, helping U.S. businesses compete abroad, and developing language capabilities. Professor Latz says, quote, withdrawal of federal funding in support of these goals will challenge America's very place in the world and our ability to contribute to creation of a more just and peaceful global order in the 21st century. Next, on the environmental front, an international agreement on plastics is put off. The latest attempt to forge the agreement has failed. After 11 days of talks, the delegations could not agree on a number of key issues, starting with a cap on production of plastic products. The U.S. position, as reported by the Washington Post, reflected the views of the fossil fuel industry. It, quote, opposed any explicit limits on plastic production and objected to any potential restrictions on plastic additives or productions. Such measures, the U.S. statement said, would increase prices on plastics. Saudi Arabia and Russia were among the countries that took the same position. Another issue on which no agreement was reached was on plastics waste, which has reached extraordinary proportions, since only about 8% of plastics is recycled. Finally, this story from Vietnam, where farmers are being removed to make way for a Trump golf resort. The socialist government of Vietnam isn't behaving like one when it comes to dealing with the Trump Organization. It is bulldozing land and displacing farmers to make way for a $1.5 billion Trump golf resort in a partnership between the Trump Organization and a Vietnamese real estate company. Farmers are being given a pittance in compensation. So now we know why Trump reduced the tariff rate on Vietnamese exports from 46% to 20%, and why the Vietnamese government rushed through approvals of the project, bypassing a number of environmental and other regulations. That's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.